too shy. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to break sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters above and down like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, critical and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there, or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app, and in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we've got a full program with organizers from some key events happening in August. My brother Oba sent me a note that August is on fire. Last week we had Brother Omawali Africa that was with us talking about the RBG Centennial Conference. Tonight we have three, maybe four representatives of some other events happening this month. And we'll talk about the events and talk about the key organizers with us after we take a brief break and come back on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. And you can always join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and it's 7:15 here in the city of Philadelphia on this hot Sunday evening. Before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at African-American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. As a matter of fact, I'm doing fantastic. I'm really looking forward to, as we showcase the different activity that's going on, the energy that's being generated this August by men and women from various organizations and various parts of the country. I'm really excited to engage in the conversation of what it means and how they got to it, and how do we define the future based off of what the events that's being presented now?
Yeah, you know, I shared with you the collage that Brother Ova put together, and he entitled it "August Is on Fire." Mm-hmm. And I think he couldn't have picked better words. The race first rally, one of the key organizers is with us. Brother Imhotep is with us. The 100 years in the world run. Brother Elias Kujichakalia is with us. The African Independence Day, the 16th annual African Independence Day, MIA Day celebration for 2020. You know Brother Oba is with us. And Brother Omowale was with us last week, and he'll probably be on again today. I think he is with us.
Yeah, all four men, I see him.
All four men are here to talk about these events. And I don't know who to put in here first in the conversation, so I'll put the first one that's in line here, which is Brother Imhotep. Brother Imhotep, are you there?
Yes, sir. Peace, my brother. How you doing?
How you doing, sir?
And I'm excellent.
Listen, we're going to talk about all four events tonight. I think all of them are unique in their individual perspectives, but I think together it forms a cultural fist. Let's talk about your event first, the Race First Rally. Well, this is what I'll do. I'll kind of bring your brothers on as we bring them on. That way we won't have any background. I'm looking at the flyer, and it says Rally Against White Terrorism, Police Brutality, Mass Incarceration, Exploitation, Miseducation, and Racism. Talk about the event coming up August 16th at Lafayette Square Park in Baltimore at 2 o'clock. Give us a little background. And, you know, before you do that, Brother Imhotep, let me read something, because we're going to involve this in the comment. After I get all the men to talk about their specific events, I'm going to come back around, because we're going to just have some conversation. But some of the things that you mentioned that I see here in the bio, that you're co-founder and executive director of the Urban Youth Initiative, the founder and minister of operations of the Pan-African Liberations Movement, and African Awareness and Critical Think Tank, a study class that you arrange for youth from ages 6 to 12. I think those things are key. And plus, you're an author, four books, Thought and Behavior Systems, Urban Philosophy, Political and Urban Struggle, New African Revolutionary Vanguard, Manhood in the 21st Century. You know, some of those things that I mentioned in the bio is going to be key in our conversation this evening, especially that critical thinking class for some of the young people. That is very key. But listen, some of the things that we talked about the event coming up, and then I'm going to bring some of the other men in, and then we're going to swing back around with just some conversation and just some talk. Go ahead. Floor is yours.
I appreciate that, my brother. Now, first, I would like to just start off by saying I'm honored to be on your show. I'm gonna, you know, I feel like it's timely, and I believe in maximizing time. So I'm gonna make great use of my time here by utilizing your time. So as the race first rally, what that is for me is I tend to not view it as an actual event per se.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as a vision coming through me. I see myself as being a conduit to bring forth this particular reality. And what I mean is that I'm very key as to paying attention to the things that are happening. And I like to be, I'm 100% for our people, and I love our people, but I like to be honest when I feel as if we could be a little bit better. And so when I look at what has taken place, you know, over the last 5 to 7 years, Black Lives Matter have pretty much hijacked the narrative of what's taking place with Black people in the USA. Pretty much hijacked, right? And so I'm not of the mindset to sit around and just keep on critiquing, you know, what's wrong with Black Lives Matter, because at the end of the day, they was able to hijack it because it was a void. And so I said it was a void in terms of true, serious Black nationalist consciousness being pushed on the ground the way that we should have been pushing it in the face of all the stuff that was taking place. So in an effort to reroute that narrative and to redirect some of the energy that have been garnered because of what's taking place, I said that we need to make a definitive statement. And that definitive statement for me at this juncture is race first. And I make it clear, you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying I'm the originator of race first, because everyone knows, you know, Tony Martin wrote the book, and the book was based on an analysis of Marcus Garvey's movement, which essentially says that his move was a race first movement. So if it was a race first movement, he was able to do all the things that he'd done because he centralized and focused on blackness and black people. I think it makes great sense in these time periods for us to resituate blackness for our people. So the way I say it, the way I break it down, I say race first is the beginning stages to African sovereignty. In order for us to be a sovereign people, we have to understand the necessity of thinking about ourselves first and foremost. If we're not thinking about ourselves first and foremost, we're not going to get down the road to African sovereignty. So I say, so let's redirect some of this energy. Let's get involved. Let's definitively state race first across the board. So for us, you know, it's a battle about who we are as a people and what matters to us. Our struggle can't be a struggle of trying to convince people that we matter. We already know we matter. We know we're divine. We know we're great people. So we're not in the business of trying to convince you. So we're going to make a definitive statement, race first, and with us understanding that it's race first, within that statement, we acknowledge and we reserve the right to do everything in our power to preserve our race, and we're going to do that. So that's what I mean when I say race first, and I list those things because I believe the principal thing we're up against is white terrorism. And under white terrorism, you get all that other stuff. You get the brutality, you get the mass incarceration, you get the miseducation, you get the racism. But at the end of the day, these white people have been literally waging a terroristic war against African people since we have come in contact with them.
Okay.
So I'm saying race first, because now it's time to draw a definitive line. You're either with us or you're against us. You know, race first, race survival, race pride, race love, race ideology, 100% black people. So that's pretty much the premise where I'm coming from.
Richard, before I showcase some of the other men, you want to throw something in or ask Brother Imhotep for anything?
Well, I'll let you go around because it's something, and I think, always not sure, right? I have three of his books, New African Revolutionary Vanguard, Politics and Urban Struggle, and Thought and Behavior System. So
I kind of figured you did, Richard. For the listening audience, Richard is a bibliophile. It's, man, got books falling off the shelf, let alone on the shelf. So I knew that you had his books. But go ahead. I ain't want to interrupt you.
No. So, based off of what he's saying, the particular action is, I want to come back and put it in the context of some of the thoughts he have developed in relationship to the other events, because I think they interrelate. So let's get everybody in and see how we can start the discussion, if they don't mind.
Okay. And let's go to our second guest so far down the line, Brother Elias, I know I'm butchering that name, Kujichakalia, is a Pan-African educator, organizer, and lecturer. He founded the Kujichakalia Academy, African-centered homeschooling co-op, in 2012. Also formed a track team for the young people, and they set up a nonprofit with the organization with him and his wife in 2020. And the event, 100 Years in the Whirlwind, the official 2020 Black August Virtual International Conference, and it's from August 14th to the 20th. It's a lot of things going on during that 3-day period to educate and to unify Africans all over the globe under the banner of resistance. Let's bring in Brother Elias. Brother Elias.
Yes, sir.
Did I get that name right, man?
No, sir.
Well, we'll put it this way. Brother Kujichakalia. Well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it that way. How you doing, yes, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you, first and foremost, for having me.
Okay.
It, an honor to have this space and opportunity to tell you a little bit about what we have going on. In addition, it's always an honor and a privilege to share this space with my brothers who are, you know, setting August on fire side by side with myself and the co-organizer, who's not with us this evening, I don't believe, Wamani Mayasa of United Front. But my name is Alias. That's my given name, given to me by my dad. Kuji Chagali is my last name. And myself and our brother Wamani, we sat back. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to create an opportunity that brought some of the most world-renowned educators, Baba Imhotep being one, Baba Oba being one, Omawali Africa being one. And we wanted to bring everybody into one space so that we could, like you said, Brother Elliot, educate, motivate, inspire ourselves, our children, and the yet unborn to be our best selves as we move forward to create an African reality where we have the opportunity to grow and actualize our truest African potential. Because without the education of peace, we don't have the ability to intergenerationally transmit that information that needs to be transmitted so we can be our truest selves. We can't be our truest selves in someone else's cultural matrix. So the idea behind 100 Years in the Whirlwind is we have created an event that is geared toward disseminating resistance education. And you may say resistance to what? Well, resistance to the plandemic, as Baba Oba calls it, resistance to miseducation, diseducation. Because if we attempt to educate, again, from someone else's cultural norm, then we're going to be left out of that conversation when it comes to actualizing our truest human potential and eventually moving to sovereign liberation. So we sat down and we tried our best to go to each and every continent. We hit five. And we were able to bring everybody together under this banner of 100 years. So what does the 100 years represent? The 100 years represents that in 1920, August 13th, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey said, I believe it was Declaration 39, he said, listen, forever and a day, the colors of red, the black, and the green will be our colors. It will be our standard, which we will carry as we march into war. We're at war right now. And I believe that it is our responsibility so we can set that example so our children can learn by observation and participation that once you're given marching orders and the mission hasn't been complete, you have to continue that mission. So we hope that being a part of this coalition, not just 100 years in the world, but part of this Black August coalition, that we set an example for our children so that they understand that it is their responsibility to have a bicentennial. But if we didn't do the work now, if we didn't do what we needed to do as the fathers, as the educators, because I'm an educator by craft. Mm-hmm. I've been teaching for 16 years, either public, private, charter, or developing my own homeschool co-op. I'm a Florida certified teacher by craft. So with that being said, you know, being in that system, I tell you that I see the mis and diseducation and the outright just leaving us out of the conversation. You know, we didn't do anything, you know, until the European, the Arab, and the Asian came amongst us. So it is our responsibility to understand that and to correct that right, correct that wrong and make it right. So this event, in coalition with all the others that start next Saturday, I think will be that thing that puts African-centeredness, put us in the vanguard of that conversation, put us back in the vanguard of our own conversation. So, again, the 100 Years in the Whirlwind event, it's about educational resistance. And we must have that if we want to fight white terror, as Baba Omawali said. We must have that. We must understand that. We must live that. If we are to really be about the business of attaining sovereign African liberation.
Brother Liz, the 100 years in the world, and also Baba Imhotep, Is this the first year of both recognitions? Have you done this before, or this is basically the first year of the gatherings?
Well, for the 100 years in the whirlwind, this is a one of one.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Okay, the centennial, this is a one of one.
Mm-hmm.
So the centennial, you know, only happens once. But yes, we have organized before, but not under the banner of 100 years in the whirlwind.
Yeah, that's what I meant. You good. You said it the proper way. As far as the race first, is this the first year of the race first gathering, or have you done it before or similar events? Go ahead.
This particular event, this particular gathering or assembly of Black people is the first of its kind that's being initiated by PLM and anybody that's affiliating themselves with it.
Okay.
But in terms of organizing, I've done other events over the years for like the last 15 years. I've been doing that kind of work. But just in terms of trying to bring people together to stand on one thing and that makes a definitive statement against the onslaught that we have been contending with, this is the first for that.
Okay.
You know?
Good. Okay. All right. And like I said, after we get the a couple more of our presenters in here, then we're going to swing back around with some conversation. The 16th annual African Independence Day and my day celebration, and it happens to fall on that 100 years recognition. Brother Oba is with us. Brother Oba, are you there? You must have dropped the phone, Brother Oba. Brother Oba?
Yeah.
I thought that was him. Maybe.
I'm here.
Oh, you okay. Okay, you there?
Oh, no, I'm here.
Okay, good.
I'm good.
Good.
Brother Richard, Brother Elliot, what's going on?
How are you, sir?
Hey, man, I'm well. Thank you for having us on. We really appreciate it. All the brothers, this African Coalition, as we call it. Thank you for having us on as your guest tonight to talk about in August to remember. For me, it's like what Baba Imhotep said earlier. It's about African people claiming or reclaiming the narrative on who and what we are. That Black Lives Matter does not define us. We don't have to go into that. I'm sure all of us on this phone agree. But that we as African people know and understand our lives matter. But the fact that we must control the narrative because of the fact that Black Lives Matter as an organization does not speak to African people, and it does not define what it is and that we want and need for our people. So it's very, very important in establishing that fact starting next Saturday with all the events that are taking place in the next 3 to 4 weeks. It's very, very critical. I would say about African Independence Day being that, this is our 16th year, the African Independence Day, and I know you know this very well, Brother Richard, is more than a celebration. We call it a celebration, but African Independence Day is a statement, a clear statement that we as Africans seek sovereignty. We seek to do for ourselves. We seek to define ourselves. We seek to control our own destiny. So everybody that you have speaking over the years and even next week has clearly made that a point that we as African people seek to be sovereign, independent people in a nation that we can call our own. Every performer echoes that same sentiment. They come from a conscious, an African spiritual and cultural political consciousness that will be taking the stage next week at African Independence Day, being that it is virtual. But the fact of the matter is that African Independence Day for the last 16 years And it was a vision of my brother, my dear brother, Brother Ahmed Akilta here over 16 years ago, who founded the African Independence Day Maya celebration. You all, I know Brother Elliot and Brother Richard are familiar with Brother Ahmed, the owner of the Pearl of Africa, mm-hmm. Gates of Zion, down on South Street here in Philadelphia, had a vision. And his vision was, when we started the Nation of African People's Unity as a coalition umbrella group just here in Philadelphia, and his idea was to spread it all over the country, where we would work with other African organizations to come up with a common solution to a common problem. As Brother Minister Malcolm taught us, that he had a vision to put the Nation of African People's Unity out there to the greater masses of people here in the Delaware Valley area, in the Jersey, Philadelphia, Delaware area. And so it was basically announcing who we were as an organization. But although the organization today no longer exists, it still exists in a way, because the Nation of African People's Unity, which was basically an outgrowth of the Nation, African Independence Day, which was an outgrowth of the Nation of African People's Unity, still exists. And so it's still alive and well. The ideas of my dear brother Ahmed Akilta here is still alive. And we keep it alive because we know and understand that each and every one of us on this call, each and every one of us on this radio show, share the same values, the same ideas. We work towards this each and every day of our lives, and that we've committed our lives to the liberation, salvation, and redemption and rise of African people. So this is a very, very, very critical time for us to, once again, as African people, reclaim the narrative of who and what we are. We understand, like I said, and like Brother Mo touched on earlier, we know our lives matter. Okay, that's fine. We don't need for white people to feel some kind of way and saying, oh, well, you know, oh, they're giving value to the lives of African people, black people. We know this, and we don't need that. We don't need them for their, you know, for their charity. What we need to do is continue to work towards the sovereignty, the independence, and empowerment of African people. And all of these brothers and all of these events are about that.
Brother Omar and Wewin, before we, I want to go around with a question, any questions and things I want to bring up to you, men. I think that we have Brother Omawale with us also. And Brother Omawale, are you there?
I'm here, Brother Elliot and Brother Rich.
Good. Now, you were here last week, which was good, and you could be here again this week and next week also to talk about the RBG Centennial Conference. And the Global Accord of the Development of the Sovereign African State. That'll be August 8th and 9th, virtually. Give us a little synopsis of what's happening on those particular days.
Yeah, so again, I'm always appreciative of y'all extending the platform. Last week, you know, you had me come up and speak about the conference, but this week, I'm a bit more excited to be here as a part of the Set Black August on Fire Coalition. So to the brothers on the line, I'm definitely appreciating y'all, and also inspired by y'all. You know, I know that y'all know that sometimes doing this work at the grassroots level, sometimes it can be a lonely journey. So I'm definitely appreciative of the men that have committed themselves. And I think it's evident in the way that they lived them in the way that they live their lives. In the way that they present themselves, that they are also committed to this work. So I'm just appreciative to be a part of this coalition. So as it pertains to the conference, though, Brother Rich, Brother Elliot, the RBG Centennial Conference is going to be held on the 8th and the 9th of August. And again, our theme is Garveyism and the renewed cry for African nationhood. What we are looking to usher in through this event is just a reanimation of the spirit of nationalism within our movement. One of the arguments that we have been making is that our people engage in unconscious nation building every day. But this day, we want it to be the start of conscious nation building. And what we mean by that is essentially unconsciously, we're always building up someone else's platform, someone else's institution, someone else's nation. And we do that just by the way where we spend what's, you know, Dr. Cambone.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, I'm saying we do that by what Dr. Cambone refers to as where we spend our terms. And terms is a synonym, I believe that's the proper word. And you have to forgive me. I'm working on about 4 hours of sleep here. But he said the term stands for your time, your energy, your resources, your material, and your spirit. Where do you place those things? Or are those things being deployed for the building up of your own nation? Or are they being deployed for the building up of someone else's nation? And I think that if we were to take a close look at those of us who are unconsciously building, we would see that for the most part, most of our terms are being deployed for the use of other people. So what we're doing is we're calling, you know, our brothers and sisters back into the fray so that we can engage in some conscious nation building. And I think that all of the events that are happening during this particular August have that at their core. So, you know, we're just happy to really be a part of that.
Let me say something, and I want you men's opinion on this. When I was a young boy, I used to go around because my dad was very active in Philadelphia with some national cultural organizations. And sometimes they would have meetings in the city here. Sometimes they would be out of the city. A few times I went with him to Chicago and other places. And he would always take me around, me and my older brother, when I was able to go. And this was in the late 60s, early 70s. And the men would talk about unifying. And it would be rousing speeches. The men would be gung-ho, so to speak. And when the meetings was over, things died. Now, I don't know whether it wasn't time then. I know that our ancestors believed in higher powers and things bigger than them. I believe that this system is coming apart at the seams, and we're witnessing it, both morally, if it had any morals, politically, economically, and these plagues. I believe this thing is hitting the world. It ain't just hitting here, and it ain't just hitting European society. It's hitting the world is a plague. It's an opportunity for our people again to strike a blow, so to speak, and to come together. I noticed that several of these events, you men are from different parts of the country. Have you found it easier? And I want Rich's perspective, too, because we're of similar age. Have you found it easier to organize with other men in different areas of the country to move forward with serious work like you men are doing here? This is serious work. And you're able to accomplish this in different areas of the country together. Have you found it easier to work with other men as opposed to in other generations past some of our ancestors, and some of them have passed on, have found it difficult? Talk about that from you men's perspective.
Well, if I could talk about that.
Go ahead.
It's interesting that you say that, Brother Elliot, because I had that conversation this morning.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It has been, I feel the same thing that you're feeling. I see the same thing that you're seeing. This is the demise of an empire. United States has been in existence now for about 250 years. And if you look at history, each and every empire has fallen within a 250-year period. So the United States is right on time with its fall. It's happening all around us. And we can see it each and every day. So it doesn't matter who you put in office. If Trump stays in office or if Biden, you know what I mean, takes the office of the presidency, this thing is still going to fall. And so we as African people have to realize that we have to look out for our own best interest. I say that to answer your question, this has been a very, very easy process in working with these three other brothers. And I say this because there are no egos here. There are no papas, no princes of Pan-Africanism. There are no King Kong consciousness in this coalition. There are no egos. There are no individuals who feel as though they are bigger than the movement, who have to brag and toot their horn when they step in the room as though everybody's to bow to them, where, you know, they're the most requested scholar and speaker on the African circuit. It has been a pleasure to work with and an honor to work with these brothers to form this coalition that came together quite quickly. But we knew and understood that this was needed, especially what we have had to endure for the last 6, going on 7 months. First of all, with this pandemic, and I call it a pandemic for many, many reasons. Matter of fact, I think I shared it with you a few months ago, Brother Elliot and mm-hmm. Brother Richard, why I call it a pandemic. And especially with what has happened with the recent uprisings in cities across the country after the deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, you know, this is timely. This is timely. And so what we're doing is striving to correct the misinformation that has been put out here, because Black Lives Matter, as I have to go back and say, what Brother Imhotep beautifully said, fill the void. Okay, now it's time for us to come and knock that out the box. You know what I'm saying? And take back that narrative, an African narrative, a narrative that speaks to the sovereignty and liberation of African people, because that's what BLM, Black Lives Matter, does not represent. So it has been a pleasure, and it's been very, very easy, and very and the thing is, this is just the start of it, because this is because we all know and understand what we have to do in the various different parts of the country that we come from. We know what we have to do, and we know that we're determined to do this, so that this coalition is real. This is not just something that is just here for Black August and for the 100th year commemoration and celebration of, you know, the African liberation flag of the red, black, and green, but this is something that's going to live on long beyond this. I know for my part, I know I will do everything in my power to continue to work with these Africans, to continue to work with these warriors that I'm so proud to be working with now.
Brother Elias or Baba Imhotep, any thing you want to throw in relation to the initial comment?
Well, what I would, Brother Elliot, I would only just pretty much echo and try to add on to what Brother Ober was saying is the fact that all of us are on this particular platform tonight, and we was on a platform not too long ago together. And I think we're going to be on a platform together on this upcoming Wednesday. To be honest, I don't even know how it came about. What I will say is that it came about some kind of way very organically.
Okay.
And we just meshing for the most part. We just meshing and we just taking these steps. But what I will say is this. I think our greatest challenge for me personally, and I like to be honest, because I'm serious about the work that I do in my time, I think our greatest challenge is going to be after August. Post-August is when we can truly determine, you know what I'm saying, what we're going to do with us coming together. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, the reason that void, and it was a void, existed is because we got to be honest in our own critique of ourselves. Like as a nationalist movement, you know, we missed the mark on some things. But I think we're in a we have a unique opportunity to redirect the energy,
okay,
and to correct some things. And I believe that what we're doing here, I believe we're on to something. All we got to do is see this through, you know what I'm saying, and keep moving and keep pushing this narrative of Black men and Black women organizing in concert together from different places. Because once we make that popular, and then we create the model, and then we can set the stage and the standards of how to go about doing it. And we can see tremendous work and tremendous effort going forward.
To chime in a little bit, I would say for me, it was it's not hard. My whole life, I've played football. Went to college on a football scholarship, played a little arena ball, and I've always been attracted to manhood. And what I mean by that is, you know, I need somebody I know is going to have my back when I'm in war. I need to know that when I run full speed into this 375-pound lineman, that, you know, Bob Imhotep going to fill that gap. Bob Ober going to come pick up the ball, and we're going to scoop and score. And if he can't get there, he's going to pitch it back to Brother Omawale Africa. And that's what I feel by these brothers. And I feel like that is a apropos analogy, because at the end of the day, football is a game of war. We're at war. It's a game of acquiring land. It's a game from stop preventing someone from acquiring land. And you know when you see someone and if they're standing in righteousness. And at the end of the day, the past is prologue. And I can tell you from the time I came on the scene and I start building and organizing with these brothers, as we've done over the last month, it has been nothing but brotherhood. It's been nothing but, you know, people know that you can just see the manhood. You can see the black power manhood that comes from each and every one of these brothers and babas that is part of this coalition. And I think that has been the thing that has been so evident, and why it's been so easy for us to come together, gel like we have, understand that, you know, this is something we're doing together. There aren't any egos. No one is poking their chest out saying, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you know, like Baba Oba said. So therefore, you don't have those fractured boys pretending to be men. You have people who are secure in what they're doing, secure in what they know, and understanding that at the end of the day, they're doing this for the people. So I think that alone tells me, and I could be wrong, but I doubt it, that we will continue to grow, we will continue to build, because the coalition that we became is something that can be a powerful force. We can be that dream team. We could be those ones that right the ship. Because even if, and this is the thing that I think that we have to keep in mind, even if the empire of the Europeans crumble, we still got to worry about the Asians. So we better be preparing for that. Mm-hmm. Because in the next 5 to 10 years, you know, the Chinese will be the economic power, and they have the military might to back it. If they call that $6 trillion debt to the table by the Americans as a declaration of war, because the Europeans don't have an opportunity, or they don't have the ability to pay that money. They don't have the natural resources to back that debt. So it's clearly a declaration of war. So where does that leave us? So we have to stay in the trenches. We have to be the closest to the enemy. We have to read the signs. Because if we don't, then our people will be left without heralds or sentinels at the gate. And we can't do that. Mm-hmm. If you weren't about being the most requested, if you weren't about, you know, saying I did this or I did that, then you're in the wrong business. The reward is understanding that what we do will live on through our children's children's children and the yet unborn.
Brother Omawale, any comment to that? Did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I mean, definitely want to add and build on to what the brother stated.
Go ahead.
I think that what has created this very unique space for us to be able to work together in unison the way that we have without any egos being at the table is I think that our generation has been the beneficiary of a better understanding of the type of leadership that we need. And I'll put it like this. Back in, I think it was 2015, Mama Marimba Ani came to Philly. She gave a lecture called The Psychology of African Sovereignty. And in that lecture, she stated that we needed to reposition our understanding of leadership, right? She said, we don't really need leaders. We need more workers. We need more warriors, right? Because the idea of leadership has been based upon this messianic model that really comes out of the church, where everybody like looks at themselves as, oh, I'm the black messiah. I'm that one individual that our race has been waiting for, you know, for me to just come and sit, put everybody on my back and save the world. And that model of leadership, I think that as our generation has gotten further and further away from church, a lot of us are embracing African spirituality. a lot of us are really trying to understand what it means to be African, meaning the values, the interests, and the perspectives that come with that. And I think that that has created the space for a new model of leadership that not only embraces, men working together without ego, but also creates space for our warrior sisters to be at the forefront as well. So when I see that, and I see that we're able to come together and say, like, listen, we're not competing with one another. Like, if we got the same enemies, we on the same team. You understand what I'm saying? So I think that when you have that clarity amongst the men, it just creates space for a new type of manhood that will ultimately allow us to achieve the unity that's going to be needed in order for us to reach our goal.
Richard, I guess we're going to take a break in about 3-4 minutes, but you heard the men, and you heard what they said from their perspective of organizing, and it's a lot easier for them now because they're putting egos at the door. It's no big eyes and little U's. Talk about it from a man that had been involved in some historic groups and historic organizing and looking at it now. How do you see this now, Richard?
You know, first I want to say to all of you that what I'm seeing is a generation that I'm respecting. I put it in generational terms, y'all are the generation before us. And I'm looking at the 60s. So that here, what I'm looking at is the next generation taking a formation and moving. And I heard everyone say towards maybe the strategic vision of sovereignty, right? So this is what I see is happening in this formation. And that's one. And I think that we should place that this formation be placed in the context of what was in a geopolitical sense, because each is talking as African people, not as African people, as Africans in North America, but Africans globally and in the global organizing. So I see this in the context of what took place in moving out of what I seen was what I use is the non-aligned movement and the new economic order, right? And Africa, as y'all are signifying these 100 years of Garvey, but as Africa is looking at 100 years past from the Declaration of the Red, Black, and Green. So I see that it's a new generation looking, the organizational formations coming together under the strategic vision of sovereignty, and that the reason why it may seem that it may have been a leadership void is because of the military onslaught of the previous generation, right? The 60s, and I think in a lot of the events, I see that even Black August and political prisoners are being, recognized. And the point of that is that those men and women, and Asada Shakur, which we honored not just last week, were in that, as young people, they were in that space of trying to formulate and organize in sovereignty. So I see this as, and I want to make sure I, give you y'all props for, in this moment, recognizing that y'all are coming together, this formation together, continuing that strategic vision. So I see it as a generational move. And when we come back after break, I think that this is important because what's in my mind right now that I want to learn from you men and your organizing ability from these events is you're honoring 100 years, but we should be thinking 100 years in the future. So how does these events, and obviously even speaking to the seamlessness of being able to come together in a coalition, how is these events positioning us towards 100 years from now? And what do you see that this event is the stepping stone to that vision as you see it, as you're working in your different areas? So I'll just leave it there. But I want to celebrate and I want the Time for Awakening audience to recognize what we're looking at is a generation of men and women who are really working together to continue, not like something stopped, continue this strategic objective of becoming a sovereign global people, as in the context that Marcus Garvey had and the UNIA had had envisioned 100 years prior.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. You can get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We have representatives here, these men from historic gatherings coming up next month, the Race First Rally. Brother Imhotep is with us, RBG Centennial Conference, and the development of sovereign African state. Brother Omar Wali Africa is with us, 100 years in the whirlwind. Brother Elias is with us, and the 16th annual African Independence Day and Maya Day celebration. Brother Oba Olenka is with us, and we'll be right back. And you, we'll be right back. It sounds like a puppy dog or something was with us too, but we'll be right back so you can get involved in the conversation. Again, by dialing 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kamban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you've called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP of the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up.
And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lauren Green sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time. Time for an Awakening. It's 8:14 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're back in conversation with some of the chief organizers of four powerhouse events happening in August. The Reese First Rally, Brother Imhotep is with us. The 100 Years in the Whirlwind, Brother Elias is with us. African Independence Day and Maat Day Celebration 2020, the 16th annual. Brother Oba is with us in RBG Centennial Conference for the Development of the Sovereign African State. Brother Omawali is with us. Four powerhouse building block events starting in August and will continue. And we're going to go back to the conversation. Richard,
yeah,
go ahead.
If it's possible, Elliot, and I hope, I guess don't mind what I have in mind to do, what I wanted to ask. And again, I appreciate you, all of you, what you're doing in this moment, that not necessarily a crisis, but this opportunity moment. And what I wanted to see, and I wanted to, you know, if each one of you can give us 2 minutes to the listening audience, because we're celebrating 100 years and we're celebrating our vision for strategic vision for sovereignty. So I wanted to know, I was thinking of Bobby Wright and this whole thing about social theory. So if Brother Imhotep and then Brother Elise and then Brother Oba and then Brother Omawali, could you give us, using your event that will be taking place in August, and in a couple of minutes, what do you see? How do you define your event what is the step towards that 100 years from now. 100 years from now, you're doing this event now. We're looking for sovereignty. How do you define that sovereignty? And why this event right here moves towards that, if you don't mind.
No, I appreciate the question, Brother Richard. For the sake of time, how I would define African sovereignty briefly, because it's really complex, but African sovereignty is essentially, it's African power. It's the ability of African people to regulate and direct and govern and manage their affairs in the world. And that's from the economic level, that's from the military level, that's from the spiritual level, the political level. It's our ability to be able to regulate and manage that and direct how we're going to go in the world. So that's African power. So for me, in order to get people to think about African power, to think about being African sovereign, people have to prioritize themselves. So race first becomes it become a tactic in a long line of a strategy to reorient people's thinking to prioritize around being Black, to put Black first. So the way I have broken race first down, I have given it 10 principles. So the first principle of race first is Black consciousness. That's the first principle. The second principle is Black pride. And then you got Black solidarity. Then you have Black socialization, then Black politics, and Black economics. Then you have Black ideology. You have Black defense and protection. We have Black survival, and then Black empowerment. So those are the 10 principles that I'm utilizing to break down what I'm defining as being race first. And the definition that I supply to race first is thought and behavior that places the social, political, and economic interests, spiritual well-being, and overall material survival of Black people first. So if people can grasp that and make that a living reality within themselves, then race first becomes the necessary steps towards African sovereignty. Because now we understand the necessity of prioritizing around our survival. I don't believe we understand that. You know, I've been doing this work since 1993. I started off doing this work inside prison. I stayed in prison 13 years and 9 months. And I've been home from prison almost 16 years. And I've been traveling up and down the East Coast. I've been to Africa 3 times. I do not think a lot of African people understand the necessity of putting Black people first, because there's a lack of consciousness. So race first becomes, for me and whoever that understands that, it becomes the means by which we can begin to do, one, reorientate the thinking of Black people, two, to redirect the narrative, three, to make Black primary in the lives of Black people. And when that happens, we can begin to move through from consciousness down to empowerment. We can touch on what it means to be socialized. Because if you talk about Black socialization, you got to deal with Black education. Because education is principally the means through which we socialize. So we don't have no Black curriculum, we're not going to have no Black social theory. So our social theory links to our educational processes. If we don't understand anything about our mindset, our history, and our culture, we can't have a strong Black curriculum. And that, you know, the curriculum. So all that links together like that. So to be socialized along Blackness, we got to have Black education.
And that leads to Brother Coochie Chakalia, who's dealing with, you know, coming from that homeschooling perspective. So when you look at it, Brother Coochie Chakalia, taking that 2 minutes and defining, you know, what does that sovereignty look like from the event activities that you're engaging in right now, could you help us from that perspective define that, if you don't mind?
Yes, sir. I heard one time it said, the first of the mind wins, because the first of the mind gets to sow those seeds. We all know that European education suppresses. Well, the Latin root of education is educare, which means to bring forth, to bring out. That's what African-centered education does. If we don't go in and bring out that historical memory that's in us already, which allows us to easily make those connections and build those relationships, because that's what the social theory is for, to understand how we relate one to another, how we relate as opposed to a boy going into manhood, a girl going into womanhood, how we relate with enemies. It's all about relationships. So an event like this or I don't want to say the bent line. This is mine. That's a long terminology. What we've done with August is we've organized it in a way that we have shown that, okay, the relationships that we build one to another, but also the relationships she'll build with the other teachers who will come in to disseminate this information is important, is pertinent. And then when people leave, they can leave with tools that they can use to further exacerbate or further teach those who weren't necessarily there what it means to be African. So they can get that understanding that they've been missing. So from my perspective, I think that, like Baba Imhotep said, if you do not have an African-centered education in place, then you can't have an African social theory. It's just you can't have one without the other. So an event like this, an event like the 100 Years in a Whirlwind, that has made a conscious effort to bring in teachers, to bring in those people, well, I shouldn't say teachers, that is totally the wrong term, who have brought in Asafos, who brought in the Jinnah, the protectors of the culture, so that they can now train the Saba to go out and do the work. Because without the work, without the information package codified and being readily disseminated or being able to readily disseminate to the people, then you won't have a social theory. So from this event, this is the thing that we can carry forward. This is the knowledge that we can carry forward. This is the spoken word that we can carry forward. You know, in addition to that, you know, we may have some people that come and even take these events and scribe them so that we can, you know, transcend time, because that's what we want to do. We want to take a moment and we want to find within that moment the means to which we can bridge that gap, the way that we can speak to those who aren't here yet. You know, I've said it and I keep saying it, you know, these events are to speak to the yet unborn, because we know what we face. We know what we've been through. But the goal is to communicate this so that we can always be moving toward African sovereign liberation. But then we also have to teach that once we achieve that goal, which will be achieved, how do we maintain that? Because we've had sovereign African liberation, but things happened and we weren't able to maintain that. So I think that from these events, these are the things that we will show, the relationships and the education and how we disseminate it, how we spread it. And from that, that's how we grow an African social theory.
And Brother Oba, you know, I see in the flyer, you have for the event that will be occurring, the 16th annual, culture is our immune system. So using, you know, and as you said, this has been an event that's been developing at over 16 years, but using that again as the base and looking towards this future, when you say, if you don't mind me using the term or the phrase for this year, how does culture in this sovereign nation manifest itself 100 years from now as an immune system?
Well, the way I see it, Brother Richard, is that culture is everything. Culture is your folkways, your mores, your principles, your ideas, everything. You can't have anything without culture. Culture is the foundation and the basis for anything, in all civilizations that have existed on this planet, had to have a specific culture that was developed. You know what I'm saying? In which the people were able to live by. The way I see it is that as Africans, that we have a culture that not only defines the everyday way in which we live amongst each other, whether that be now or 100 years from now, but it also protects us from those cultures or those things that are alien. You know what I mean? Like a virus. You know, a virus attacking, you know, the particular immune system. But if our culture, if we're strong in our culture, if we have fervor in our culture, if we have an understanding of what Baba Imhotep talked about, the idea of putting race first, of putting Black people first, of putting our spirituality first, our education first, our our the way that we deal with each other socially first, our politics first. Then we build up our immune system. We build up a defense against anything that is alien. But at the same time, the immune system that we have created keeps us strong, keeps our family strong, keeps our marriages strong, keeps our children strong, keeps our village, our society strong. You know what I'm saying? Those are the building blocks that I see for the nation.
And with that, you know, Brother Omawale, now, I appreciate that you have centered in dealing with the 100, RBG centennial around the global assembly that had occurred in 1920, and bringing Africans from all over the world. At this point, and here we are now, 100 years later. And even if we look at Brother Imhotep mentioned, we can see, and sometimes we kind of discuss possibly that it may seem like we haven't really built on it. So using the ability of the RBG Centennial bringing you men together, your organizations together, your regional things together, and celebrating how seamlessly, organically that you're working in this generation. How do you see in this short, and I apologize to everyone that I'm asking this because I know it is a more nuanced question, but I think we should constantly put it out there. How do you see using this event 100 years from now, where it should go? What did it define in that sovereign nation look like as you see
it? Yeah, I would argue that the significance of this particular centennial and of this event is that it serves as a milestone for us. You know, it's an opportunity for us, to pull the car over, kick the tires, change the oil, as we're headed to this destination, so that we can reassess. See if there's a better route that we can travel to get there more efficiently with the right amount of people. So that being said, one of the things that, and we put this in the title of the event, or at least, so I think Brother Elliot, the document that you're referencing when you read was the conference overview document that we drafted and shared with people when we first convened the conference. Mm-hmm. And we referred to it as the RBG Centennial Conference and the Sovereign Accord for the Development of a Global African State. So initially, now I'm talking about tangible, like what's coming out of this event. Initially, the name of that document, or the second part, rather, of that title was the Global Accord for the Development of a Sovereign African State. But we made a conscious decision to change the wording in that from Global Accord to Sovereign Accord for this reason. One, we wanted to emphasize the fact that we as a people are already sovereign. And that's what Garvey was trying to get us to understand when he said in his quote that, if the 400 million Negroes would realize that there was a sovereign power that existed within them, if they knew who they were, then within 24 hours, they could have a new nation, a new empire, and be a new race, right? And he said that that would be something that would be brought into existence, not by the charity of other races of men, but by our own will. So that conscious decision to change it to the Sovereign Accord is basically us stating that, hey, we're already sovereign, but we're putting in motion the development of that state. And when we examine the type of state that we're looking to create, it is not simply a sovereign African state. It truly is a global African state on the African continent that all African people globally will become citizens of, right? So the tangible thing as a part of that, sovereign core for the development of a global African state is we're looking to start the development, and we talked about this last week in a bit more detail, but the concept of these, what are those critical matters of state that you need to have documented, that you need to consider and building a state and or a nation. So that really is one of the main focuses of day two. Day two, when you look at all of the panels and the presentations that are occurring, again, they were all strategically selected because in many ways we're trying to crowdsource ideas for nationhood development that can become the bedrock of this document we're looking to produce going forward. So I think that for us, this is really not just a gathering. Yes, part of it is celebration, but a good deal of it is strategic, and it's a lot of planning and plotting for how we carry this thing forward 100 years from now, because I think the moment that we're in is a moment that we've never seen before. And I mean, I know that obviously, right, that's clear, we haven't seen this moment before, but what it means for our children and our progeny, if we do nothing right now, what we're going to leave to them. And we can't leave another generation a legacy of just going to white people to beg for their sustenance, to beg for employment, to beg for help, and to beg for assistance. That can't be the legacy that we leave to our children, because we already know what is going to happen to the people who take that approach, essentially, when things, you know, really hit the fan. And I think that we can all see that coming, which is why there's such urgency around this movement right now.
And Elliot, as I pass this to you, you know, one thing that, you know, it's clear, right, that this moment, you know, provides us this opportunity. And but the, and I say but, and that's, you know, there's used to be an elder to say, you know, but is a term you use when you want to turn things back around, right? You really ain't going forward. And although what I'm looking at is that one of the lessons that we have to learn as these generation of men and women move this strategic vision forward, we have to, and I'm speaking to the Time for Awakening listening audience, we have to put together a better defensive mechanism. Because one thing about August, and I guess I'm focusing on the Black political prisoners, because those young people at that period in time, they were moving towards, whether it was continental, dealing with the whole question of the continent, or whether they were dealing with, you know, five states here in the South, they were moving towards that. And the state put together a mechanism to move those men and women out of play, to where the next generation had to work on itself. So it's on us to protect this generation of men and women, you know, not be like what her sister was saying, just standing on the sideline, talking, you know, rallying, like this is some type of sport, rallying them on, when we know, and even in this moment, the 45 is sending unmarked federal agents into the community. And before that, had Boulder Guard classify these kind of activities as Black identity extremists, right? We have to be clear that we have to protect this formation and this generation in order to be able to move forward. I just wanted to make sure we understand that.
Before we got a couple calls on the line here. We're in conversation this evening with organizers of three building block events happening in August. The 16th annual African Independence Day and Maya Day celebration. Brother Oba is with us. The Race First Rally, August 16th. Brother Imhotep is with us. The 100 Years in the Whirlwind. That's scheduled, a 3-day event scheduled for August 14th to the 16th. Brother Elias is with us in RBG Centennial Conference. Brother Omawali is with us, and that's slated for August 8th and 9th. And also, I neglected to mention, and we'll probably try to get Cam on before the event, is in Cobra's National 31st Annual National Conference. And the theme is Elders Preparing the Next Generation for Reparations. So we can see that all of these events are happening in August, and moving forward is the key. And let's go to the phones here. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes. Brother Elias and Brother Richard, good evening, Brother Malcolm. Good evening to your guests.
Can you get close, because your voice is muffled? I don't know whether you're on a speaker or can you?
You're in the bed now. Are you in the bed now?
Hello? Okay, go ahead. That's a little better.
Yeah. Okay.
So I am noticing a phenomenon now that they say, you know, a lot of churches now are being attacked.
Yeah, Brother Marcus, your voice is really muffled. I don't know whether you
let me hang up and call back in.
Good. Okay.
Maybe.
All right. Let's go to 404. 404, are you there?
Hello. Hey, Yehudu, brothers. Yehudu, you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, look here, Elliot. Did y'all get that article I sent y'all on the car manufacturing companies in Africa? Did y'all get that?
What? But right now we're talking about other events. Come on, brother.
Well, this is what I'm trying to tie this in, man, okay?
Go ahead.
I like what these brothers doing, man, okay? What I'm saying is what can be done over here, okay? They manufacturing cars in 6 different countries in Africa, and so we got to catch up, man. That's the point I'm trying to make. I appreciate what these brothers doing. Marcus Garvey, I love it, but we've been over here 100 years since he left, and at least y'all started, man. That's all I got to say. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you for your contribution. Let's go back to 602 again. Maybe there is a little bit better. 602?
Hello. You hear me better now?
Go ahead.
Okay, so I was saying that I'm noticing this phenomenon now of churches are fire.
No, it's really bad. It's really bad, Brother Marcus. I don't.
Yeah, nobody just can hear me.
Yeah, it's your voice
right,
is kind of muffled.
That's
okay. All right, no problem.
Yeah, if you could try another line or something, it would be good.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir. Let's go to 647. Toronto, 647. 647.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I wanted to say that about this red, black, and green situation. I wanted to ask the brothers, are they familiar with Rupert Lewis and the work that he's done around Marcus Garvey? He's written a lot about Marcus Garvey and the red, black, and green. And the second question, or the second thing I wanted to ask is, we have two political prisoners. Rochelle Cenkay McGee has been in prison since 1963. And he was with Jonathan Jackson when Jonathan Jackson attempted to break him and others out. And also Fitzsimmons is also a brother from Los Angeles. He's been in prison since, I think, 1967, but he was in the Los Angeles chapter of the Black Panther Party, and he's paralyzed now, but he's still locked down. I'd like to get some clarity on those two questions.
What was the second question? I heard a statement about the political prisoners. What was the question about the second?
Question was, do you have any information on Rochelle McGee? He has been in prison since 1963. I think he's the longest held political prisoner in the United States. And there was another brother that was from Los Angeles named Fitzsimmons. He's younger than Rochelle McGee, but he's been in since, I think, 1969. I was asking about those two individuals.
And I think you asked the initial question about the red back. What did you say?
Oh, the first question was about Rupert Lewis had talked about the red, black, and green. He wrote Rupert Lewis is a Jamaican scholar, former professor, and he's written a lot about Marcus Garvey and so on and so forth. He's one of the, along with Tony Martin, he's one of the experts on Marcus Mosiah Garvey.
Okay. Any of our panel wanted to.
Yeah, in terms of Tony Rupert, I'm not familiar with the brother or his work. I'm definitely familiar with Dr. Tony Martin, for sure. So, I mean, if there's anything he wants to point out specifically about their brother that we can look into, for sure. But in terms of the second part of the question about the political prisoners, so we were purposeful in centering our political prisoners in this activity. So in many ways, they're centered. So one, And this hasn't been announced yet. The promotion for this is actually going to start next week. But we have something referred to as the RBG Week of Return. So the RBG Centennial Conference is being held on the 8th and the 9th. So the Week of Return is the first 7 days, and we have basically events that are going to be done on social media all throughout that week. So the Thursday of that week, the activity for the day is called Free 'Em All Thursday. And the reason why we chose Thursday, because the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey was sentenced to prison on a Thursday. So the particular activity that we have on that Thursday is that we're asking folks to, A, write a letter to a political prisoner, and or, but hopefully you'll do both, to, you know, consider donating to an organization that's doing the work to liberate our political prisoners. And the organization that we're suggesting is the NEPPC, which is the Northeast Political Prisoner Coalition. So that's Thursday. Then the Friday, we have, as the, I guess it's like the grand finale of the Week of Return, we have a Zoom concert, and it's called the Prelude to the Whirlwind Concert. So that Friday night is going to be a concert, and we're taking donations. It's a concert slash fundraiser, and the money for that is completely being donated to support our political prisoners. And then on the Saturday, which is day one of the conference, we have a session during the conference that's referred to as the Sublime Order of Denial Induction Ceremony. So Dr. Julius Garvey, who's Marcus Garvey's youngest son, is the keynote speaker for that particular session. And with the Sublime Order of Denial, the honorees are people who are 70 and above and have lived a life that's exemplary of dedication and loyalty and commitment to African liberation and sovereignty. So without a doubt, you know, all of our political prisoners, especially the ones who are 70 and above, are on that list. So, you know, Rochelle McGee, I believe Ed Poindexter is actually the oldest and longest serving political prisoner. But yes, I am familiar with those names, and we have purposely centered them. And also at the close of the conference on day one, we have a panel with our political prisoners. So we have Baba Sekou Odenga, Mama Janine Africa from the Move 9, and Baba Daruba Bin Wahad speaking on a panel talking about the importance around the work to liberate our political prisoners. So that's something that we were, you know, very purposeful in making a part of the conference.
Thank you. I just want to say one thing, like one last thing, was Rochelle McGee basically became a lawyer inside of prison. He was I guess he's been in prison, like I say, since 1963. I think he's only been out on the streets maybe 6 months, because he came from Angola, Louisiana, in prison, came to Los Angeles, and he was there for a few months maybe, and was straight to prison. And, well, as you know, he was on trial with Angela Davis, and he's a great lawyer, supposedly very, very good lawyer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution.
Thank you, sir.
Let's go to 267. 267?
Uh-huh.
Are you there?
When you come up here,
267?
Johnny's supposed to come.
267, I think he's getting admonished there by his better half. We better leave him alone. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. Raleigh?
Okay, that's us again.
Dr. Cambot, how are you?
I'm good, and we call in to listen as usual, but it was wonderful not knowing what the topic was tonight to hear Brother Imhotep, who we were very close with. And all these movements for August that are really important. And I agree with Brother Richard that we are at a point where we have to figure out how we're going to protect these things. I think this might be a great time with all the chaos that they're involved in to move these initiatives forward. But, you know, we always have to remember Tulsa and Wilmington and New York and Rosewood. That they will not allow what we have to do, and how do we protect what it is we do. and there have to be more than one way of going about protection. You know, we can't just use what we've learned from them. There are many ways and that we can provide protection for whatever it is we're moving forward. So I'm very pleased just to sit here and listen to the wonderful movement, and particularly the movement for the political prisoners. You know, I still think that our means for liberating them might still be a little antiquated, because, as you said, they've been in there over 50 years, and nothing that this system, this legal system, has been brought to bear to assist them. We have had a melanated president who didn't free them. We've had, you know, so-called Democratic on our side, so-called president that didn't liberate them. I don't think that the legal means that are at our disposal is going to work. And what else will we do? So thank you, and Imhotep, I'm looking forward to this conference, and keep pushing.
Thank you, Mama.
Thank you for your contribution.
Hey, Ellie, can I raise a question with Brother Imhotep? Something I've seen in his book, and I wanted to see what he wrote, and I think I'm looking, trying to see if I see the year. This particular one was written in 2015, Politics of Urban Struggle, and what is occurring. And I'm looking at solidarity, urban solidarity. And I wanted to know, now you wrote this in 2015 and we're now in 2020, and what you laid out as this solidarity, is this what you called earlier of organic formation, a part of that visioning of solidarity that you were speaking to as it relates to our internal politics?
Before I answer that question, what I'm going to say to you, my brother Richard, is I appreciate you, because you looked in that book and you pulled out something that's crucial when you tied it together. Yes, urban solidarity is organic. It's organic. You can't get to the level of solidarity. We need to be progressive without it being organic. And so what's happening with us is something that's happening that's very organic. And because it's happening organically, it's going to be natural. And anything that's natural is best. It's in its best state when it's natural. So that's why what we're doing can only progress and only yield results because it's organic. And yes, it's urban solidarity. That's the basis of it. That's an essential function of the urban solidarity that I speak of.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's go to, let's see if the brother's all right. Let's go to 267 again. 267? 267? I don't know what's going on with 267. Let's put him back on hold. Let's go to, caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Are you there?
Yeah, that 267 might have been a signal of distress.
Yeah, it might have been.
Y'all need now. Y'all now.
Let's go to it. Caller, are you there? Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Let's put them back on hold. You know what? This is what we do. We'll take a brief break. And when we come back, the time we have left, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We have the organizers of four building block events happening in August. August is on fire. The 16th annual African Independence Day and Maya Day celebration happening August 1st. Brother Oba is with us this evening. The Race First Rally happening August 16th in Baltimore. Brother Imhotep is with us. The 100 Years in the Whirlwind, the event, 3-day event happening August 14th to the 16th. Brother Elias is with us. And also the RBG Centennial Conference, August 8th and 9th. Brother Omar Wally is with us, and we didn't forget about Brother Elias. He's just sitting there. We get him back involved in the conversation because I got some things I want to ask him when we come back from break. You can get involved in the conversation again by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power, Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
That this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the black man. Because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen. We're the singers and the dancers. And we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend? You can't do nothing for me.
See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us. Yeah.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:59 here in the city of Philadelphia. And we'll go back to the phone before I pose a question there. Let's go to 267. 267?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello, Brother Elliot. This is your brother, Joe Harrison. How are you today?
How are you, sir?
Great, great. I just want to say I'm excited to be a part of the RBG program. I'm actually working on my presentation on agriculture as we speak and getting inspired by your program with Brother Omawali, Africa. So thank you for, you know, you and Brother Richard for what you're doing and keeping Black issues at the forefront. You're a treasure to our community from around the country. I just want to thank you for what you do. So I'm excited to be part of the RBG conference in 2 weeks.
You know, before we leave, I don't know whether Brother Omawali want to chime in. You gave me a communication about a brother that has an invention, and I told Richard about it.
Torpedo pot.
Yeah, I think that's something that can really benefit our people as a whole, and especially people in urban areas that want to produce their
Absolutely.
Own food. We plan to have him on soon so the people can really get familiar with his invention. I think this man is a genius, to be honest.
He is a genius. He is a genius. It is very, very simple. Torpedo Pots is a self-watering planter. It's perfect.
Well, I don't want to talk about it now, but I'm just saying I want to
All right, all right. I will talk about it now.
Because we're going to have it on.
It's an excellent product, yes. And so agriculture is the foundation of our existence here. And it's a foundation of nations. So you really can't have, African liberation, or we can't really be free until we're able to feed ourselves. So our agriculture needs to be at the basis of our economy, at the base of what we do. So it's very, very important. So with the technology now, whether you have 1,000 acres or a few seeds in a cup, in a styrofoam cup where you're starting off with, it's the largest industry in the world, and it's part of our culture. And then for thousands of years, so we domesticated the animals, we would first raise crops. So this is a part of who we are. So this is a great opportunity, hopefully, to inspire some folks to get back to who we actually are as African people and get back to our agricultural roots and start to build our community and build our nation, build our people up to where they need to be.
Hey, thank you for your contribution, brother.
No welcome. Thank you for having me, and I love your show, brother. And you're a great barber too.
Thank you for your contribution. brother Elias and brother Amotep. Two questions, kind of directed at both of you because you're in education, but the whole panel can get involved in this. Through situations and circumstances in this country, our people have been forced, and I'm talking about some of our people that depend on this man for their very existence, forced to look at other options. And when I say look at other options, I'm talking about educationally. We know that our children has been behind the eight ball in this country, been miseducated, going without education, targeting our children for prison industrial complex based on test scores. So when they're talking about children not being in school, and I don't believe these schools are safe for children, our children to go to anyway, it's forcing our people to look for other options. You already involved in some things, Brother Elias, with your independent African Senate Academy. And Brother Amotep, you wrote at least one book, and you're involved in mentoring with the critical thinking study class for 6 to 12-year-olds and the manhood training, the book you wrote on manhood in the 21st century. Talk about this opportunity for us to, while this house is on fire, well, we can kick the door open and make real progress for our people.
Well, for the 100 years in the whirlwind, that's a major focal point for us, to allow our family to know that we have a viable alternative to, you know, going headfirst into a pandemic. We have the scholars on deck, and we have, and they have codified their information, and they made it virtual. So at the end of the day, we have developed this whole platform to say, hey, we have this option. It was our responsibility to respond to it, and I think that we've done a good job of doing that. We've done that well. So now what we have to do is we have to spread the word and let the people know that this does exist. But I want to push back a little bit, Brother Richard, if I can. I think that African people have always been educated here, you know, in the United States. It's just that we haven't been educated for our benefit.
Okay.
We've always received education. We've always received, you know, vocational education. It's just that that education wasn't in service to us. So now moving forward and looking at, you know, what we're trying to develop here, we've developed a educational process that, or an educational outlet, that's a better term, an educational outlet that says, okay, hey, listen, there is no reason, if you know about it, for you to send your children back into a situation where they can possibly get sick and lose their lives, and then that can spread in your home. So we have something that will, one, keep you safe, but also educate you so that so that your children's best selves can be activated, cultivated, and developed.
Brother Amotep, you want something to add?
Yes, just to add you, my brother just beautifully laid out what my position have always been from the position of socialization, which, like I said earlier, that there is no true socialization without effective education. I think one of the things we're struggling with, and it's a matter of how we think and process information. Many people are under the impression that this thing we call school is a thing, right? That this thing that we call school is a natural human institution, but it's not. That's a European construction. For us, our education was naturally a part of our socialization process.
Okay.
It was how we did it as people. It wasn't, you know what I'm saying, you went off to this thing, you know what I'm saying? It was like your first institution was your family. And then what your family instilled in you was reinforced within the community, right? So this thing that we, so most of us think that this school system, this thing, this creation is natural. And we believe that it's the responsibility of other people to educate our children. That's the reason why so many people turn their children over so willingly, because we believe that the thing is natural. So we have to help our people understand that the parents, the family, it's the beginning in the first institution that's had the primary responsibility of educating their children. Because once we can begin to reorientate how our people think about education, once we can reorientate how they think about education, then we can see a greater move. And I do believe that this time period that we are contending with right now is a great time for us to begin to change these conversations to help our people better understand, like, this is your responsibility. Let's get together. If you don't feel like you are capable per se, link up. Let's build co-ops.
Yes.
Reach out to the people who you know that have the skill sets and the abilities and the willingness to bring forth the proper education for our children. This is these are the conversations that we have to raise up. So many people who misperceive this thing we call school and understand that the true educational institution is the family and your community. So that's always my position. Like, reorientate the thinking of people. Like, re-socialize how we think, how we perceive, how we conceive. If we can reorientate that, you know, I think that's one giant step forward towards what we define as being sovereignty.
You know, and to you, brothers, one thing that I find myself continuous pushing, and it may be about my language, and it may be about my double consciousness, but and looking towards the you know, the future as a part of our sovereignty, that's strategic vision, that we have to look at our children as our wealth, our only natural resource. I think that especially those of us in North America, I know that we, and Brother Omawali, me and you one day is going to have to go back and forth about that, and others who say land is the basis. But I'm arguing in my way of thinking to this point, and maybe that I know that'll be for a different discussion at a different time. One thing that was taken away from us is our own personhood, and the one thing that we must gain back is under our own control is our personhood, and that's why in this political economic framework, it seems that we have to take control over. Of our own children as our wealth, and build our structure and implant inculcate, or as you said, Brother Elise, pull out the values, the cultural understanding by that education socialization process. But until we look at them as our wealth, we are continuing to give that wealth over, or really maintaining it in this system as it's designed, because we were the foundational wealth for this system. And I don't think our history shows where we took over and said, we control our wealth compared to we're trying to negotiate in other things. That's just a thought that I wanted to throw out there and not necessarily for us to develop or differ with it at this point in time.
But Brother Richard, if I may, I don't think that, you know, my position wouldn't differ with what you're saying, because like Baba Imhotep said, and you just said, the system, the educational system that they have in America is Prussian. It's not African. It's Prussian. And at the end of the day, when they developed a 13-year program to divorce us from our families and marry us to them so we can be in service to them. And like you said, they are dealing in imperialism. They're not dealing in imperialism of land. They're dealing in imperialism of our children's minds. So we have to get those minds back. We have to teach our children that they, first of all, we have to treat them like they are our most precious commodity, because they are. That we can have all the land in the world, but if our children belong to them, then we still lose because there's nothing to take us forward. So, I mean, I believe you're emphatically right. So again, it goes back to, like Baba Imhotep says, it's a socialization that has to happen via the African-centered education, which will orientate, focus our children, bring our children into the right mind, and allow them to know that first and foremost, you know, the most important person is you. But outside of that, I am we. You can't do it without us, and we can't do it without you. Mm-hmm. And in that right frame of mind, then our children can be about the business of the work. They can be about the business of carrying on this march that has been going on since 1441. You know, so I think that what you said, I don't think it's debatable, you know, because we can have all the land in the world, but if we don't have our children, if our children belong to someone else, then we lose without a doubt.
If I could just, you know, add on a
yes,
little
sir.
Bit
what, yes,
and kind of go back in this conversation. Brother Richard was making reference to the fact that Black children, African children, are basically our wealth. They are basically one of our greatest natural resources in our children. And I was thinking that in a way in which to draw that wealth out of our children, to draw it out, in order for you to be able to draw that wealth out, you have to look at our children as an investment. One of the reasons why education is so critical, especially for us as African people to control our own education, is to be able to look at our children as a long-term investment. I say that because the African-centered school, the independent African-centered school movement has lacked in the way in which our children have not been seen as a long-term investment. There are many schools that have fallen to the wayside because many of our parents have not wanted to pay the tuition necessary for a solid, concise education that their child would give them, because they don't look at them as an investment. So they don't see the wealth in which can be drawn from an investment that they made a long time ago in their child's education, if you understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key things that I think all of the events focus on education in some shape, form, or fashion, all the events that are going to take place in the next couple of weeks. The African Independence Day Maya celebration stressed education this year. I had just a few weeks ago on my show, Hispanic and Goma on Duden Knowledge Radio, I have Brother Marcus Klein. Marcus Klein was so profound in understanding the importance of education and the idea of investing in your child's education so that you can draw that wealth later on. You know what I mean? It's like almost like you're depositing in the bank, but you're withdrawing later on because you gain interest by having invested in your child so young, their education, their growth, and their development. He was so profound on our show that we invited him to be a part of African Independence Day, and he was honored. We have Brother, and we all know the great work that Brother Marcus Klein is doing in Chicago with the school that he has going on. They are the independent African schools that he's established there in Chicago. But we also have Baba Amin Ojukwu and his wife, Mama Nkoyo Bina, of the Uhuru Academy. that they established originally. They actually have two campuses. They have one, the original one that they established down in Fort Worth, Texas, which is still legally in existence and is still running, but they actually have relocated themselves and their family to a second campus in Columbia, South Carolina. In Columbia, South Carolina. So we have made it a point this year really to stress the idea of education and the idea of looking at your children as a long-term investment. The only way that you can draw wealth from your children is that you have to deposit in them and have the confidence in them to make them a long-term investment. You have to invest in your child's education young so that you can see the wealth. You know what I mean? Bills, you know, that interest builds in the child's development later on. So I totally agree with you in that sense, Brother Richard, that yes, children are wealth, but there must be a concise effort by the parent or parent, whether it is a single parent home or it's a home that is a nuclear family home with a father and a mother, to invest in their education early in order to see the wealth of that child later on in their life.
Yeah, brothers, before we wind things up and get y'all to kind of billboard each event or before we close out the program, let me ask a question for each of you. I asked this question to Brother Omawali last week, and he gave me his answer then, but I'm going to throw it out at you other three brothers. This issue of, see, when I mentioned before about this country in decline, and we could see it coming apart at the seams, those of us who are conscious and really looking at what's going on, this issue of violence, being that this country was conceived in every type of violent activity imaginable and crimes against humanity, and I'm not even talking about what he did to our people and maybe the native people here, but the whole concept of violence, the gun and everything else, we can see now that violence is really consuming this country. And it's consuming our people that are ignorant of what's going on, and also consuming innocent people that are not involved, whether it's elders, children playing in the street, or whatever. My solution to it is simple. We need to immerse our people in the culture, and the culture of who they are, the values and morality of who we were as a people. And I think that that would start stemming the tide of violence in our communities. I want to get you men's opinion. I know it's other factors involved in this and some of the behaviors of some of ignorant brothers and sisters that are doing this, that are the catalysts of this stuff in the communities. But I just want to get you men opinion on what we can do to start stemming the tide of this plague of violence in our communities.
Can I chime in first?
Certainly.
My reason for wanting to chime in is I like to use my own life as an example.
Okay.
But like I say, I you know, the last grade I went to was the eighth grade. I've been incarcerated by this society since I was 13. I'm all through juvenile facilities. My first time in adult prison, I was 16. My last time in adult prison, I've done 13 years and 9 months. And I would be considered, my past would be considered one of these people that's violent, because every time I went to prison for, you know, drugs and guns.
Okay.
That's what I went to prison for. And I even got shot. I got a 45 on my spinal cord. So I understand that mentality very well. So what I would say is this. The way we're going to curb the violence, black men who understand that they men have to go out there.
Okay.
We have to go out there. The dynamics have to change about black men staying in the house, coming home from work, going in the house. Right? We have to get in our communities and engage our young brothers that's out there. Because I stand on one philosophy. When men don't stand up, boys run amok. And what we see is our boys running amok.
Okay.
The men will have to go out there. The men are going to have to get organized and get on point and go out there and engage these young guys on a daily basis and engage in them. Because a lot of times we think people do wrong because they don't have a job. That's not the case. That's not the case. People are behaving crazy because this society makes you crazy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? This society makes you crazy. And it makes you crazy in such a way that you are rewarded for being crazy. Mm-hmm. So it encourages your craziness. So we have to be out there to be able to help our brothers come back to what it means to be a black, young black man.
Okay.
And we have to show them that by being there. Most like myself, most of them didn't have love. They don't have love. They don't have family. They don't have fathers. They don't have uncles. They've been raised by, you know, a single mother that's struggling. So they have all these other dynamics that they're dealing with. And then they are going through identity crisis. So now in their neighborhood, you get rewarded for being violent. You don't get rewarded for working out your situation, for talking it out. It's backwards out there. I get rewarded for hurting someone. I don't get rewarded for working through it. You know what I'm saying? So to keep from being joked or made fun of, I'm gonna take on that street mentality. We need men out there. And our men need to be out there engaging these brothers, helping them understand, you know, how to move and regulate these situations. I was a part of a street initiative, and our primary focus was to focus on shootings and homicides in Baltimore City. And I've done this since 2008 up until 2020. And what we did is we went out in the streets on a daily basis, and we didn't go after the at-risk youth. We went after what we defined as being the high-risk individuals. We went directly to the brothers who was carrying guns. These are the ones that we work with on a daily basis, the ones that's carrying guns and shooting and killing. We want to meet with you. And you know what? We was able to mediate a lot of their conflict because they allowed us to talk for them. And we realized that they didn't want to do any harm. They didn't know other ways.
Okay.
And that's what I've learned from 2008 to 2020. This would have been my primary principal occupation, working with that element. And I realized from all those years that every time we mediated a conflict, they never went back and shot and hurt each other. So it told me that they was open and they was willing if people got involved in their lives. And I know that firsthand. I'm not making this up. I'm telling you what I've done firsthand from 2008 to 2020.
Mm. Brother, thank you for your contribution on that. Before I pass it to Brother Obon and Brother Elias, and also Brother Omwali, if you want to say more on it, because we talked last week. Brother Imhotep, is that why you really kind of pushed with the critical thinking for children 6 to 12, the classes that you run, teaching them those skills that they don't have? In fact, a lot of adults don't have critical thinking. They don't analyze our situations or any situations. They don't look deeply at it. So that's a skill that adults don't have, let alone our children. So when you – go ahead.
It's interesting you bring it up because this – I was going to say this earlier. So in any culture, it's the primary responsibility of the family and the elders to enculturate the children.
Okay.
See, it's the responsibility to teach the children the culture. What I say is, I say in jail yet too, meaning our way. So when our way is not taught, then we learn another way. Because there's no middle passage and there's no neutral ground. So either we're going to teach our way or we're going to learn another way. And so what have happened is that we have not successfully taught our way to the children because a lot of elements in our community are falling to the wayside because a lot of us not dealing with those elements. I'm going to tell you from firsthand, right? And the entire time I was dealing with that element in Baltimore City, I was the only brother a part of that street element that had African-centered consciousness. The only one. Mm-hmm. The only brother that was dealing with this population during this time period in Baltimore City, doing what I was talking about doing, that had African-centered consciousness.
Okay.
The only one. And I've noticed that across the board a lot of times, you know what I'm saying, that population is being allowed to languish. We are critiquing the violence, but no one is going in there dealing with it.
Okay.
We critique it, but we're not dealing with it. So they're languishing because they do not know their way. They do not know how to be African men. So they are going to be destructive because this society awards and rewards them for mimicking white people, white ways,
okay,
white thought, white behavior. And that's what's happening. So, yes, that's one of the reasons why I started the African Awareness and Critical Thinking Study class, to bring in, to create an institution that would allow people to come in to learn who we are as African people, to learn that we are people who places a value on life. For us, life is sacred. It's not something that we just throw away lightly. For us, it's in us to see the essential good in the other African man and the other African woman. So for us, it's Ubuntu. We understand and recognize the essentiality of African people. So there can be no Baba Imhotep without the brothers that's on here, without you. There can be no you without me. There can be no you and I without Mama Cambone, who just weighed in. See, for African people, the essentiality of us is something that we hold up real high. This has to be taught to our people. We have to enculturate them, bring them into the culture, teach mm-hmm. them their ways, teach them how to be African, because this society have moved us off our center.
Mm-hmm. Any other brothers want to chime in?
I'll say the fact that Baba Imhotep is right on it. We have to confront this as African men. You know, we have shirked our responsibility. We have made excuses as men, and we've not engaged it. And I'm looking at Philly, and I'm looking at Chicago, and really Chicago in particular, where I think the crime that is happening there of African people killing African people, I think is blown up and exaggerated. I think it's talked out and supported a lot by the CIA, the FBI. I'm looking at Chicago in the sense that as it stands, that Chicago is the third largest city in the United States in this country. And the fact that, you know, it's the home base for the Nation of Islam, and they haven't even gone out and really engaged and confronted the community in the way in which our community needs to be confronted, as far as these young brothers and scooping them up and really talking to them. One of the things that I'm going to be talking about at the conference, especially the 100-year conference, is being able to pass the spear from our generation to the next generation. And it is so important that be done, not just be done, but it has to be done in a certain way. There's certain things that we have to teach these young brothers and sisters that are out here, because not only are they in to the violence that is happening, but there are a lot of young people that are out here that want to do the right thing and have the zest, the energy, and the fire to get involved in marches and demonstrations that took place just, what, a month and a half ago around George Floyd. And then they got themselves involved in Black Lives Matter. You know what I'm saying? And things of that nature. And a lot of young people have the energy and the zest and the fire, and they think that the work that they need to do is in marching and protesting. That's only 10% of the work. There's a whole another 90% that they don't know about. Who's going to educate them on the 90% that they need to know about? Who's going to educate them on the other alternatives that exist besides BLM, Black Lives Matter, that are out here? Who's going to teach them of the alternatives that exist with PLM, Pan-African Liberation Movement? Who's going to teach them of various different organizations that exist out there that that have their well-being of teaching these young people how to be African, how to contribute to themselves, to their family, to their people in their community, if it's not us? Who's going to step out and confront these brothers that's out here that's warm with each other? You know what I mean? That may be in gangs and things of that nature. We are dealing with gang violence for us. So I totally agree with Baba Imhotep on that for too long we've shirked the responsibility, we've made excuses, we've not, we've made promises to the community that we've not fulfilled. We have to step out here and we have to engage them straight up, You know what I mean? Bottom line. And if we don't, then it's going to continue. And then we're going to have people continue to make excuses that people continue to say, oh, well, y'all making excuses. Like, y'all so concerned about when police terrorism happens, when brothers and stuff like that are being killed and shot by cops, but y'all don't pay no attention to what's going on when brothers are killing brothers. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we have to definitely engage it head up.
Okay. Brother Elias or Brother Omawala, any comments before we kind of wind it down?
I think to add an addendum to both of the brothers who just spoke is we have to develop a psychology to show that Africans win. The young brothers in the streets that's out there doing it, that's out there getting it, they're not going to be attracted to something that seems archaic, that seems outdated, outmoded, and just invested or vested in work. Now, the work is the work, and the work has to be done. But somehow we have to articulate, you know, or socialize, you know, what is a win? You know, what is attractive? We have to make this uncompromising African position seem more attractive. It has to seem, you know, different than, because we have to take into consideration that, you know, somebody else has their ear. Somebody else has created their consciousness. So if that's the case, you know, going into the streets, it's definitely, you cannot, you know, get around that. But how are we going to keep their ear? How are we going to make sure that we endear them to themselves, which will bring them closer to us, and then we can return home together? So we have to develop a psychology that they understand that being uncompromisingly African is how we should be. There's a total win in that situation. But we have to show it. We have to prove it. They want to see the evidence. They want to know that, you know, at the end of this, you know, the work wasn't in vain. I'm not going to end up in a nursing home. I'm not going to end up blind. You know, I'm going to have to sell everything to, you know, make my ends meet. You know, we have to be, you know, strategic in attacking that and dealing with that psychology, because, you know, most of the time, you know, crimes are committed because we're hungry. And I do understand that black-on-black violence is in the black-on-black criminal is in service to racism, white supremacy, imperialism, or global white terror domination. But at the end of the day, when we commit crimes, it's because we're hungry. So how do we go about the business of teaching our children to feed themselves, or in the interim, you know, we have the ability to feed them. So, you know, we have to develop a psychology that, you know, speaks to that nature. We have to make sure that, you know, we're not seeming outmoded and outdated. We have to make sure that, you know, we're not always preaching to the choir. You know, we have to, you know, step outside of our comfort zones and go amongst the masses so we can bring them home too. Because if we're not doing that, then we're doing a disservice. So just to add, you know, to what both brothers have said, I just think that we have to make being African look more attractive to the average African young brother that doesn't necessarily know he is African.
Okay. Brother Omawala, you want to wind it up? Or you?
I won't say too much because I think I said enough last week.
Okay.
I'll just reiterate with what most of everyone else has said, and I would argue that we're hungry. Our hunger is due to our homelessness. You know, violent conditions create violent people. Violence is not inherently bad. I think that it's a bad thing when it's misguided and misdirected. So most of the conflict that we see in our community is as a result of the fact that we have been deprived of resources. So I know Brother Richard said you didn't want to have that debate tonight.
if I could say one last thing, I was talking to my mother earlier, and I said that this country knows what we need.
Oh, they certainly. Need. Certainly.
They know what we need. They're not going to give it to us. We know what we need, but we don't have the confidence to go out and get it. The great Baba John Henry Clark said, The greatest thing that the Europeans did and was stripped away from the Africans during enslavement, the greatest thing he took away from us was us. We're not confident.
Wait a minute, repeat that again.
People. The greatest thing that the European did to the Africans that he stripped away and took from them during our enslavement was our confidence.
Okay.
We're not confident. He took that away and purposely took that away. People who are not confident are people that are never going to be a threat, you know what I'm saying, to the status quo, to this society. But he was instrumental in doing that. And we must learn how to become confident. And what all of us were saying was that by doing the things that we're doing, confidence is at the core of that.
Yes.
So we know exactly what we need. There are many of our people who know exactly what we need, but they're just not confident enough in themselves and as a people to go out and get the things that we need. America knows what we need. America knows that we need, America knows that they owe us. And what we need is really the very thing that they owe, which is land, which is monetary support, which are tools and machinery and things of that nature to begin to develop for ourselves as a people. They know that, but they're not going to give it to us. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I have to say about that. But it ultimately comes down to our confidence and us as men. As African men going out here and confronting and dealing with this issue concerning our youth and our brothers that are out here in the street.
Hey, listen, thank you, men, for your contribution.
Elliot,
go ahead.
Let me add one last point.
Go ahead.
And this part is going to come from a direct experience. Like I said, I was a part, and you can Google this organization. It's called Safe Streets. So that's Safe Streets. That's what I was a part of from 2008 to 2020. But one of the things I knew this before I became a part of that, because I, like I said, I'm from the streets. One thing I know about the streets is this, and one thing I know about our brothers. Everybody out there that's being violent, they're not out there trying to make no money.
Yeah.
That's not what they're out there trying to do. The level of the money isn't out there like that no more. But in terms of engaging them, the streets recognize strength and power. Yeah. Make no mistake about that. That's what I know firsthand. You know what I'm saying? I was in 7 different Maryland prisons, and I know firsthand that they recognize and respect strength. That's the reason why I say that granted, we got to find ways to move them off the streets, no doubt, and reorientate them. But if we sharpen some strength consistently, they will respond to that.
Okay.
I know that firsthand.
Okay. All right. Brothers, wrap it up for us. Highlight each event. Tell people how they can get involved, how they can get virtual tickets, or however you're doing it. Let everybody know what they need to do. And, any brother can start. Brother Imhotep, you can start it out.
Yeah, I'll start. So the Race First Rally, August the 16th, Baltimore, Maryland. We starting basically at 1 p.m., and that's going to be at the Henry Highland Garnett Park. Located at Lafayette and Drewood Avenue. We'll spend time there about 30 minutes, and then we're going to walk from the Henry Highland Garnett Park. We're going to walk about 13 minutes over to Lafayette Square Park, and the rally itself will commence there. There's no tickets or anything like that for this particular event because it's an outside event. We will be adhering to the social distancing. We're asking everyone to wear a mask, but at the same time, we're telling every Black person to come be a part of it. So it's August the 16th. Baltimore City at 1 p.m., the Henry Highland Garnett Park. And that's Drewood Avenue and Lafayette Avenue. We're going to be giving away 100 David Walker appeals, that little booklet.
Mm.
We're going to be giving away 100 RGB flags, the 3-foot by 5-foot flags. To the first 100 people to show up, you will receive these items. Because we're just trying to, like I said, we're trying to stay in the whirlwind. And make people aware about what this thing is all about. So that's August the 16th, 2020.
Yeah. And one more, because I might have to run down there and get my David Walker appeal and flag.
Yeah, okay. Listen, I loaned my appeal to one of my customers and I forgot who I gave it to, and they didn't come back forward and give me my book. So I might have to come. I might have to come get another.
I got them on deck.
Okay, Brother Liz.
Yes, sir. The 100 Years in the Whirlwind Conference will be on from August 14th through the 16th. You can visit www.dtc1.org. That is www. D as in David Walker, T as in Thomas Sankara, C as in Chokwe Lumumba, and the number one.org. We pretty much got the cheapest ticket in town. It's $35 for admission. It's a 3-day conference. I would suggest to all of the viewing public that or listening audience that may want to come and be a part of this, invest in some Bluetooth speakers, some HDMI cords so you can cast to your television. Because we want this experience. We want you to live in this experience so this experience can live in you so you can carry it on as you move forward. So don't try to sit there and for the 40-plus hours that we're going to be broadcasting, you know, from the five continents, North America, South America, Asia, Europe, and Africa. And I don't understand why I forgot that, so I'm going with my brain. But, you know, don't sit there and try to sit there in front of a 15-inch computer. You know, that's going to be hell on your eyes, and you won't be able to get the fullness, the richness of this event, of these tools, of these gems, because I'm going to tell you right now, Baba Imhotep is bringing it on this interview. If you think that he and Brother Omawale and Baba Oba are not going to bring it at the 100 Years in a Whirlwind event, you are sadly mistaken. So this is going to be a full-length production. And I think that, you know, everybody that takes the time to come over, they will leave with tools that they can carry on in their life. So again, please go by and visit www.dtc1.org. See you there.
Brother Oba.
Well, I always, love to, first of all, I have to go back and say thank you, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, for allowing for us to, you know, use this tremendous platform, this great platform, this great show, Time for Awakening, to, talk about all of our various events, to, shed light on this beautiful African coalition that we have assembled for the 100-year commemoration of, the African Liberation Flag, the RBG, as well as Black August 2020 and beyond. So I'd like to thank you all once again for allowing for us to have this opportunity to, come on Time for Awakening once again. It's the kickoff event for Black August as well as the 100-year commemoration. The 16th Annual African Independence Day Maya Celebration 2020. Culture is our immune system. It will be simulcast viewed on YouTube, but it will be viewed on two different YouTube channels. You can see it on the Urban Shamans YouTube channel, as well as the Due to Knowledge Radio YouTube channel. It will be from 4 to 8 p.m. And we have just a powerful lineup. We will have an award that's definitely near and dear to my heart this year. We have the presentation of the Ahmed Akil Tahir Pearl Africa Award. And this year's recipient will be the late, great Mama Koswa Ali Sabri, Okonfo, Mama Koswa Ali Sabri, I know Baba Imhotep, we're very familiar with Mama, who basically is one of the founders of the International Life Conference in Philadelphia. I know you're very familiar with him, Brother Elliot, as well as Brother Richard.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be honoring Mama Koswa this year. We have just announced yesterday that Mama Pam Africa, who was on my show yesterday, Sonic Ngoma, she's going to be out in Chicago with Chairman Fred Hampton. They're going to come to us live from the historic Hampton House in Chicago, Illinois, next week. We also have performances by by the likes of Richard Raw, Brick the Foundation, Kazi Gang, Queen Jazara, Brother Ife Jai, as well as Tajay, a.k.a. the Black Fist, just to name a few of the performers. And the highlight will be addresses delivered by both Baba Dr. Wade Nobles. He'll be talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and the and police brutality and its effect on the African community. That is the title of his lecture, as well as we will also have Baba Nwalamu Baruti and Mama Inaya Baruti of the Ankoban Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. They will be delivering the keynote address this year entitled Culture is Our Immune System, after the great quote by Mama Mbeki Ani. So we ask you all to join us. We will get started early, actually, on our show, The Sonic Ngoma, which comes on Saturday at 11 a.m. on Duna Niles Radio. We will have a preview show to African Independence Day 2020. So we are going to have some of the a look back at some of the best speeches and some of the best performances in the last 5 years of this 16-year celebration. And that will be from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And then we'll come back on the air from 4 to 8 p.m. Actually, it's going to be extended because of the people that have just been added, man. It's just gotten so big, it's ridiculous. But we're going to have a tremendous event, a virtual event, and we're just asking for everyone to please, tune in. It's a family event as well. So we want you all to, you know, not only bring yourselves, and your mates or your wives, but also bring the children. This is just going to be a tremendous event. And I'm just so proud of what we've done for the last 16 years. And I'm really, really proud to be a part of this African coalition, commemorating the 100-year anniversary of the African Liberation Flag. Given to us by the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, and of course Black August. And with that, I'd like to say BB 48, BB to me.
All right, brother. Well, Brother Omwali kind of said some things last week. You want to hit it again, Brother Omwali? Good.
Yeah, I want the folks to know, if you want to find out more information about the RBG Centennial Conference, definitely check out the website. It's RBG Centennial, CENTENNIAL.com. So it's RBGCentennial.com. I believe the early bird pricing is $35. That gets you access to both the main room and all of the breakout sessions through the 1st of August. After the 1st of August, the ticket pricing, I think, goes up to $50 for the same offering. But again, you know, I appreciate Brother Rich and Brother Elliot for having us on the platform tonight. And I appreciate the warriors who were on the platform alongside us. So, I'm looking forward to August. And I absolutely feel that, you know, the wind of the ancestors is at our backs. And this is going to be a successful gathering. And coming out of this, we can expect great things.
Brother Elliot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Can I leave my email address? I mean, our email and our official webpage.
Oh, go ahead.
Our webpage is AfricanIndependenceDay.org, African spelled A-F-R-A-K-A-N, IndependenceDay.org. You can also reach us at Gmail at AfricanIndependenceDay@gmail.com, as well as you can, find out more on social media at African Independence Day African underscore Independence Day on Instagram, as well as the 16th annual African Independence Day Maya Celebration 2020 on Facebook. So you can reach us all week long and everything. And we will also be having a virtual African marketplace. So if anyone is interested, please, email us. And you can also call us as well, my bad. You can also call us at our official number, which is 267-521-1544. Once again, that's 267-521-1544.
Listen, I want to thank you, all of you men, for your dedication and what you're doing. It's no question that you're going to be successful and moving forward. I'm not even talking about in August, just moving forward in whatever you do. The brother Elias and Baba Amotep, you can send me some of your information. I'll make sure that it goes on Time for Awakening site. In fact, I want all of you men to utilize that site to, you know, just let people know about the events that you're doing, because a lot of people look at that site all over. So, you know, people are going to see what you post up there. So just send me your information. I'll put it up there.
Okay.
Brother Oba told me he wasn't that technically savvy. So I'm going to show him some things so he can kind of help me out, because sometimes my hands be a little full. But, yeah, I want you, man, to utilize the site. You got my number. Anytime you want to come on, give updates, talk about what's happening in your areas of the country or whatever, the door is always open.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Brothers, we'll talk soon. Peace.
All right.
Peace now.
Peace, my brothers.
Richard.
Yes.
Interesting conversation with all the men. Letting our folks know what's happening and what they can look forward to in August and moving forward. It just makes me feel good to hear what these men are doing, Richard, and the confidence that they have. You know, I agree with Brother Imhotep when he said one thing that was destroyed during chattel enslavement of our ancestors was the confidence that we had in ourselves and one another. Rebuilding that confidence. And sometimes you hear it. I mean, so we've heard it on this program, Richard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we ain't never going to be able to do this. We can't do that. And the this and that stuff we can't do. We can do anything that we want to do as a people if we come together. That's the only stumbling block, the coming together. We can accomplish anything that we want. But we have to do it together. Yeah, so you know, I'm just excited about
I'm
what
really
they're doing.
Excited man. To see that this generation, you know, and I hate to talk that way because it dates you, right? But I think that we have to think in past generations, present generation, and future generations. Because if we don't think in that fashion, then we'll miss that. Things do change over a generation, and things do occur to a generation that the other generations must learn from.
I know it.
You know, and must inculcate to the next generation that's coming through. So I'm really glad to see that this generation of men and the women that's engaged with them, the organizational process that they're using in order to pull off these events, is you know, so dynamic and so rich. But it requires, as this conversation brought out, it requires all of us to engage actively, not just in the event, but, and I think it did come up, what occurred will have to occur for those of us who believe, for those of us who see the need of sovereigns having taking a sovereign position. What we have to do, we cannot be sitting on the sideline and said we heard this is not a feel good session. It's not entertainment. This is preparation for work that has to be done for the survival of us as a people. If we look at it any other kind of way, as individuals or as groups, then we're just fooling ourselves.
Before we leave this evening, I want to give the lineup on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. African Perspectives with Brother Oshi as host. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Always good conversation and guest on African Perspectives from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. From 6 to 8. Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And I talked with Brother Jihad today, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
I digress a little bit. I wanted to get Minister Rodney Muhammad's phone number because Now he's being attacked by Jewish folks about being anti-Semitic because he showed support for Deshaun Jackson and Nick Cannon. So that's right here in Philadelphia. If anybody look at their wire service or some of these sites, you'll see it. Wanted to try to get the Minister Rodney on, but I was unable to get the contact number from Jihad, but I'll reach out to him. And Jihad's always, he's another one that's always in the street, man. And he's remind me of Brother Imhotep.
Right.
He's always in the street doing something, and he this violence going on in the community, he's giving away food. I got to give it to him, man. It's a lot of these men out here that they have my utmost respect for the things they're doing. Including you, Richard. You always moving around.
It's you know, it's work. It's work for all of us to do, and that's why it's so important that, you know, we keep this, you know, with Time for Awakening Media and Time for Awakening program, to keep doing as we've done as far as emphasizing, you know, the, you know, the people who are doing work. And I think that builds our confidence, you know, and gives us energy. And one thing I don't know if he would mind me saying it, but for all those men who are putting on these events, they have to manage their energy because this ain't no easy job. You know, I mean, it's like being a weightlifter, you know, and you keep adding more weight, or we keep adding more weight on them. You know what I mean? Between what the system is puts on us and what we put on each other. So we have to, you know, encourage them to keep themselves healthy to be able to be long distance runners instead of sprint, you know, burning themselves out or we burning them out.
Okay. All right. Let me get back to that lineup. That's 6 to 8 on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. After that program, we have Black Therapy Central. That's on Mondays from 8 to 9, every first and third Monday. Conversation Reparations, which is Nkoba's program, from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. On Thursdays from 6 to 8 after 7, some of the young ladies from Black Reality Think Tank do their program. On Thursdays from 6 to 8. On Saturday from 4 to 6, Black Sisters Talk. That's on Saturday from 4 to 6 on Time for an Awakening Media. And then on Saturday evening from 6 to 8, the Elders of Sankofa. And then on Fridays and Sundays, Time for an Awakening is back. On Fridays from 8 to 10. On Sundays, you know the time. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. Can't we?